just beautiful, and being in Portland, very anxious to get my license plates changed, and I want to introduce my lovely young assistant here, Mr. Alex Hargreaves from Corvallis, Oregon, resident of Oregon. Reborn here in Oregon?
Yeah.
Oregon native. How many of you can say that? Probably a lot, actually, here. But so we're just going to be, we'll play some and then we'll talk some. Anybody is welcome to ask questions. And if you want to pull your fiddle out to, you know, ask a question about something that you're working on or anything like that, you're more than welcome to do that. We're just going to quickly consult Alex and me here. We've known each other for a few years, but we seldom get to actually play together. And, so we're just going to figure out what we know, and then we'll play it, and then go from there. So probably fiddle tunes.
Okay.
People are probably going to be more interested in fiddle tunes for a while, and then we'll get it jazzy stuff later. So what do you like?
Do the Forkadeer.
Forkadeer is great. Yeah. So we'll start off with a little fiddle tune that is popular all over the country. Seems to be distinctly American, at least the title is Forkadeer, it's called. And I think it might have something to do with the antlers on the deer, but it also might have something to do with the fact that there's two, that the tune is played in two different keys. Not simultaneously, but consecutively. Although, you know, you could make a case for it, you know, if certain notes could be changed. Maybe we'll talk about that later, too. Then you could play it in two simultaneous keys and one consecutive. But enough of that. We'll play it, and then you guys be the judge how many keys we're in. Thank you. this guy. Wow. I was concentrating so hard I started drooling. All right. That's one of the things. I mean, we can talk about that if you want, but probably shouldn't. So that was Forkadeer. As you probably heard, it started in the key of D. The first part is like an A structure, A-A-B-B structure. So like first part twice, second part twice. Second part was, it went to a different key, went to the five of what we were playing before. So in the key of D, the five chord would be what? Anybody got an idea? A, yeah. A. All right. Canadian key. So, good. Okay. Any more questions before we like play some more tunes? We'll just keep going on, kind of four times.
Do you know each other?
Do we know each other? How do we know each other? From going to these fiddle camps, these wonderful events that have sprung up in the last few years. Sort of a nice, not exactly a replacement, but a very welcome addition to the round of fiddle contests that go on all summer, usually. In the last, 15 years or so, people have been organizing camps, like mini festivals for, different instrument players. Alistair Fraser, the great Irish fiddle player, started a great fiddle camp. He has a couple of them that run in California. Mark O'Connor has a couple of fiddle camps now during the summer. It's gotten to the point where, there's a Rocky Mountain fiddle camp and some stuff on the East Coast. The guy that originated this, of course, was Jay Unger, the guy that wrote Ashokan Farewell, that Civil War tune. He's a great fiddle player. Started this idea back in, maybe 20 years ago. Ashokan is the name of his music camp. It runs in upstate New York. So at this point, it's cool because, if you've got, if you don't have a day gig or something, you can actually spend this whole summer, from going from camp to camp, tripping on the lily pads, and not even having to go home, unless you need to, make some money somehow. But you can almost do it by just selling your CDs or something at the camp. Anyway, so I teach there. Alex has been coming to a lot of these. We met. His playing is such that, it's hard to resist, hard not to pay attention. Great player, and if you think he's good, you should hear his sister, his younger sister. Pretty amazing. Great musical family. And so that was nice. You were playing very nice. It's kind of a bluegrassy kind of approach to it. Really nice. Anything you want to say about that?
I can't really play old time. Can't really get the bone stuff down, so yeah. I resort to bluegrass.
Yeah, the old timey stuff. Yeah, I pretty much resort to whatever I could grab for that stuff. But that's cool. That's what fiddling's always been about. The great thing about fiddling as opposed to violin playing. Well, Stefan Grappelli told me actually that in classical music, you do when you play what you cannot play, and in jazz and fiddling, you play what you can play. So you have this, you get to make a choice, and if you're kind of ambitious, then you try to play what you can't play, but at least you can always retreat to a safe spot, after you've screwed up temporarily, And of course, the fiddle is always kind of a scary instrument because there's no safety net. You don't have any speed bumps to keep you, focused on where the notes are. You kind of have to remember where the notes are. It's kind of hard to see. You can't really see what you're doing because your fingers get in the way of your other fingers. And it's all right up next to your face, so you hear all the little imperfections. They're just right there. So, pretty much every fiddler violinist thinks they suck. Which, may or may not have, just had that, idea just probably has varying levels of truth from day to day and from player to player. But I always just tell people that are taking it up to the first 10 years are the worst, and if you can get through that, then you're probably going to be good. And then some people take a lot less time. You were playing great. How long have you been playing now?
About 10 years.
10 years. There you go. You were great 5 years ago, and probably earlier than that. So some people, they're the exceptions, but that's why we love them, and that's why we pay them the big bucks. So let's see. How about another tune? Let's see. Let's do a waltz. Let's do a nice wake up in the morning waltz. You do like Josephine's baptism waltz or something. You know that one in G?
I played before you get started off.
Okay. Yeah. So not too fast. Yeah. left it. Comes from Sweden, actually. It's written by somewhat recently, about 10 years ago, by a fellow named Roger Talaroth, and he plays in a group called Vessen, which is a fantastic group playing mostly original music that's based on traditional Swedish music, which is a whole other can of worms. Can we move in a little bit? Yeah, please. Oh yeah, you know, I would probably try to, first time I would probably try to play it kind of, almost very, you know, kind of astringent kind of. Just trying to grab the really easy, you know, open strings, the easy harmonies. doing something like that that sounds kind of old-timey. Sometimes it's really effective to like just stick with the one. You know, if you're coming out, if you're coming out of a lot of double stuff, rich stuff. The thin thread and the like rich Corinthian spread.
And you compare that to what you were playing while you were with him, but with the one person.
Yeah. Well, then, you know. I'm sorry. What was that again?
Having what you were doing the first time.
Yeah. So, like, if we're doing it together, then, like, if Alex is playing the melody, then, like, I might play, like, I could play like a very simple thing, like at the beginning, you know, the usual progression is simple to busy. So I might just go like, you know, do a little, the little dots, you know, where I'm just like doing a little pinch with my first finger. So it's all in the same bow, right? And I'm just kind of tilting it like, you know, kind of really what it is, you know, like you're pinching with these fingers. Sort of like, so you're getting a little
pressure.
Yeah. So you can get a lot of notes in one. I'll stand up so you see that. Yeah, there's a lot of increments to that. You know, you can just do it like that. And you can kind of let the bow slide along between so you get that. So you can do that, or you could like even make it even skinnier, you could like do an octave. Play. 2, 3, 1, 2, go! And that melody, there's like a counter line that's very hip, which and the original group is played by the guitar, but it goes, so the main line goes, so the counter line goes, so it kind of outlines that E minor. And so 2, 3, 1, 2. Like, you know, people, this the double fiddle thing where, you know, you usually, like, you kind of do this boilerplate where you play the harmony on top. You can actually move that harmony if the other fiddle player is up. You move what you might play, like, da-da-da-da-da-da, da. Play that. Sorry, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, go. So you could play that, which is sort of like the quick and dirty. You can move that down, so you kind of get out of the way of the melody, so the melody's still on top, because people tend to hear whatever's on top. That's what people generally hear, you know. So you want to get that melody out there, so you might take that harmony and move it down. Instead of, you could play it down here. So 1, 2, go. So you can hear that beautiful melody. Thank you. That and then you got, and that's actually, you know, there's actually a name for that. It's called a drop two voicing, which in jazz is like, it's basically you take the next highest harmony and you just put it down an octave. So, you know, and that's really common in jazz, actually, is to like keep the melody on top. And it's not so common in you know, fiddling and bluegrass and stuff like that, where the harmony is always, you know, you just stack it. I'm kind of liking more and more as I get into my old age, putting the harmonies on the bottom, because then you really hear the melody. And then also you get to be down here, and this fiddle just happens to sound really good down here. It sounds good down there, so I kind of go for that. So thanks for that question. That was, anybody else got any questions about what we were doing there? Yeah, lovely waltz. That's who's that? Oh, that's on Alistair Fraser and Natalie.
Yeah,
that's a very nice version of that. Although I quibble with some of the backup, but that's just my personal quibble. And it's also on. If you guys can locate these records, they're on this group called Vesen, which V-A-S-E-N, which in Swedish means noise, and they have a violist and a guitar player and this guy that plays something called the nickel harpa. Does anybody know what a nickel harpa is? It's just imagine like a giant fiddle that's stretched out about twice as long. And then it's got like a big contraption here, like a hurdy-gurdy, where you push buttons to stop the strings. And it's got sympathetic strings. So you can't really play it like this anymore. You kind of have to play it like a guitar. So then you got this bow, and you're kind of dodging the ball. Swedish, I don't know. You know, they figured it out. They do a good job with it. It's a little scary, you know. And the guy that plays it is named Olav Johansson, and he doesn't seem to have any like scars on his face. Maybe. I don't know. So you figure that. Of course, he's also very tall. So really, what it is, it's like it's really down here when he's playing. So that's okay. Those guys. That's probably the tallest band in the world. Anyway, so enough of that. Let's play some more music. Oh, let's see. Oh, Arkansas Trail. How about thank you. This fellow's 14 years old, by the way. Yeah, great. And I'm 53. Okay. Well, okay, that was Arkansas Traveler. That's this tune that many people might consider a little bit overplayed, but as you can see, it, you know, it can be overplayed in sort of a interesting way too. We can over. It's those kind of tunes. That sort of falls into a whole category of tunes. Those kind of tunes that you sort of almost feel like there's kind of a straitjacket. You know, there's tunes that are kind of open. You know, like for instance, like a tune like Sally Goodwin or something like that. And it just never, you know. I mean, you can really do a lot because there's not that much to it. You know, it's just. And it's just the same, so you can really, because it's just nothing there, you can kind of go anywhere and kind of do anything. And then there's those tunes that you sort of like, kind of get, it puts you into this channel, you know, like, it's like a narrow channel, you know, like you're going, it's like a big river, and then all of a sudden the river goes through the rapids, and then you're going through this narrow channel, you're kind of stuck, and you can't get out. And those tunes like, yeah, like, the second hand of half of Arkansas Traveler. Right? Right, it's just, bro, you know, what do you do with that, you know? And then, and tunes like, I was thinking Blackberry Blossom also, you know? Like, the first part of Blackberry Blossom, you guys know what I'm talking about? It's just, yeah, like, where do you, you know, you can, like, leave notes out, I guess. But there's also, you know, I think I have spent a lot of time, and you probably have too, just trying to figure out alternative ways to get through that. And that's where you kind of need to, you know your instrument and know a few little tricks about, like, sequences, which is what that is, right? Anytime you have, like, he seems to be moving through like these little iterations of the same lick. It's called a sequence. And so I've spent a lot of my musical life playing around with sequences because that seems to be where you can actually start to get your, your looseness up, you know, and kind of get your facility up. And I know that Sam Bush, people like that, spent a lot of time doing that too. I don't know if you really... Have you spent much time just goofing around with kind of sequences? Because it's an interesting thing. It's like scale exercise. Like, how many people have taken some classical violin or anything like that? Anybody here? Okay, yeah, cool. You know, because those horrible, horrible scale exercise. You know, that kind of stuff, the chords are... All that stuff is... You know, in the context of, oh, we're practicing our scales, it can be very, you know, boring. But if you start thinking about it in the context of, you know, oh, like, what can I, how can I use this to expand my, you know, improvisational options on the instrument, then it starts to make a lot more sense. That's the part they don't really talk to you much about in classical music, but that kind of stuff can really come in handy, you know, when you're... just, you know, being able to, like, follow a sequence up. You know, or, like, go through that in like, a couple of different chords. If you're in D, and then it changes to G, what would that have? Or, you know, going around the circle of fourths, D, G, C, F. Well, yeah, that kind of thing. Okay, better to, yeah, do as I say. The idea that you can, you know, once you get comfortable with that, and there's one sequence that I really like, which is very easy. Which is just playing the notes of any major scale, like four notes. You could do it just three notes. And see what I'm doing? It's very easy, you know, just you're just taking the notes, like say with A major scale, right? And then you go to the next note of the scale. You build off that. And then you can do it in fours. And it kind of starts almost sounding like you're playing like swing music or something, because you know, like the swing style, they're always going. You know, that kind of stuff. And really, they're just outlining arpeggios. But that, you know, is a great way, you know, if you can get this kind of thing under your hands to where you're just doing it without having to think about it, like, okay, I'm in the key of, you know, A flat. Then you kind of get yourself in a position where you don't really, you're not having to like worry about, oh well, is that note going to be in the key, right key? You know, everybody's had that feeling of like, okay, I'm going to go to a note, but I really don't know whether it's going to be in the key or not, or whether it's going to be the right note. Oh, okay, well, I'll just play it anyway. And then your playing gets a little, you know, hesitant. And probably, again, with the problem with the fiddle is that it's all, it's so obvious how you're feeling and what's going on. It's just a big, it's like, it's like a little guy standing up, you know, like with a microscope in your ear going, okay, this person is feeling insecure, you know, he's feeling, oh, why am I up here, or stuff like that, you know, it's just, it's like a window on your personal world. So anything that you can do to like sort of increase your confidence level, I, you know, that's something that is really cool, because you can use those for those kind of tunes, like for instance, and trying to break up those sequences again with like Blackberry Blossom, same deal, you know, like let's just do that kind of slow. One, two, three, go. Play fiddle here at this little workshop. Great. Okay. Yeah. Just say, you know, okay, today I'm going to goof around in G, you know, and like just, and you can start with two. Does that sound familiar? And then, right, and then, okay, well, the next one. Okay. okay, and then, you know, it's all using the same, right, all the same notes in the scale. You know, just get used to those fingers. It's just like playing the scale, but you're just, you know, adding the two notes on top. And so forth. You know, and then, you know, just get it going in G, and then all of a sudden you realize, oh, well, I guess if I can play it in G, I can play it in D, right? Because it's the same finger. You know, so you got that. And then, you know, once you're comfortable with that, then, you know, try another key, try, you know, D flat. Or you could play it in A. And then if you want to go to D flat, you can just, like, put your finger up on the D flat note on the D flat. And you can use the same fingers you used for the key of A. You know, even though we don't have those frets, you know, we can still treat the instrument like it had frets. You know, how many people also have a mandolin as well as a fiddle? Yeah. Good investment for a fiddle player. You have the mandolin, you got all your speed notes, you got your lines, you got your little dots, you know, you got all that little mappage down there. You can, like, kind of look. Oh, okay, that connects with that, and there's a little shape, and all that stuff. And that just transfers right over to the fiddle, because we are superior beings, you know, the fiddle players. You can internalize all this, you know, stuff, and they need to be looking all the time, you know. Especially the young, like Chris and all those guys, it's like, it's so funny because they're all like this, you know, like, whoa, man, I just did that, that's amazing. I can't believe it. Ultimately, you kind of want to get in a place where you don't really have to look, you know. But it's, you know, at some point, you know, to start out, you know, it's good to be able to look. And as I said, you know, it's kind of hard to see what's going on because, well, if you got your third finger down, you can't see your second finger. Lean over, and that's bad posture. Anyway, anybody got any further questions about any of that stuff or the rhythm stuff we're doing or anything like that? Well, okay, good. Yeah, I know it's early. So I might just talk a little bit about the rhythm stuff, which is really great if you just got two fiddles. It's kind of a technique that evolved from playing in groups that didn't have any guitar player or banjo or bass even. Just something that we needed. I was in a string quartet for a while called the Turtle Island String Quartet, and we were doing all this contemporary music that had the material was like jazz and contemporary music that originally had drums in it, so we were looking for a way to do the drums and everything else. So I'd learned something, this technique from Richard Green, you know, years ago, and he showed me this thing that you could do, and then we kind of developed it into this huge sort of gimmick that sort of invaded everyone's life now. But it does come in handy if you're, like, into doing some accompaniment, or if you're into just the idea of, like, never stopping playing, ever, you know, in a situation. This is a way to do it without, you know, like, getting everybody mad at you for always playing the melody or always soloing, you know, you can actually back somebody up. But the idea that, and this is, like, comes from basic string band 101, where you, like, if you're playing a backbeat, everybody know what a backbeat is? It's like in a bar of four, right? One, two, three, four, one, two, three, four, my fingers are snapping on the back, you know, it's what white people have to learn. And they do, you know, they can learn this. This is, you know, we're smart. So you often see, like, bluegrass fiddle players just sort of chunking on the backbeats, like one, two, one, two, three, four, one, two, one, two, three, four, you know, like that, you know. If the mandolin player is busy taking a solo, then this is what you're doing, usually. So we just turned that into something that's a little bit more complicated. Instead of just getting one sound out of this motion, we get two sounds by getting sound on the downstroke and then leaving the bow on the string and then popping it off again. So instead of this, we get, right, so we get a sound on the down, and we get a sound going up. So that's like twice the energy, or twice the result, right? Yeah, complicated logarithm there of same amount of effort, but twice the sound coming out. We did a little complicated thing Those fiddle players that are really interested in this can either see me later. I'll be wandering around. I don't know when. Danny's supposed to come in about 11. We still got some time. I don't know if I want to get too far into this, but the idea that usually you're holding a bow with a beautiful bent thumb, a graceful bent thumb that you've spent years perfecting, and then but for this grip, you actually straighten out the thumb, roll the bow out in the outer knuckles, and so that the hair goes on the other side of the stick. Got it. So we get that thing, and then move it faster, right? It's just still that, you know, up and down, sound on the down, sound on the up. As it goes faster, it's still the same thing. It's just certain things are louder, certain things are softer. And then making accents. And then, you know, you can like make a downstroke. It all just devolves, you know, to slow it down. It's all just this. So just a matter of like getting comfortable with that. The whole point of it is to, you know, make, you know, something that feels good groove wise, not necessarily make more noise, but just to, yeah, it's better. I also have, you know, I should mention this, otherwise I'll hate myself later. Although I always hate myself when I mention it, but I do. Website stuff, there's some postcards back there in case anybody wants. But I have like a couple of videos, instructions. Well, I got stuff. And they'll be at the merch table. Stuff are us. You know how it is. Gotta make a living. Yes. Instruction video, all that stuff. Also with CDs. Okay. So let's play another tune. Let's play. Anybody got any questions about
when you were dampening, you weren't hitting any chord back there, right? That's just.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times you can just either damp with your fingers, but, you know, actually, what's cool is that you can actually sort of damp with a bow. On the downstroke, anyway, you can damp with a bow so that, you know, there's no sound. Of course, when you come up, if you don't want a sound there, you've got to be. But usually, you know, it's cool if you're just. And then there's like. And then you're kind of playing notes on the upstrokes. You know, like, yeah, yama, you want to play a little, like, ska solo, you know, like that. Like, A minor to D, yeah. Yeah, that kind of thing. So where it's just really not, you know, it's almost as it doesn't even matter, you know, what the sounds actually sound like or what notes you're playing, you know, as long as you're just getting that nice, you know, you just don't want to be, okay, I'm making noise now, you know, that kind of stuff. You really want. I recommend when you're doing this, play along with some records that you like, you know, that have really good rhythm. Play along with the records. You kind of absorb. You know, you're looking for like ideas that sort of correspond to what maybe the drummer is playing. You know, if the drummer's playing a little pattern. You know, something that repeats. It's kind of cool. You know, this is not necessarily something that, well, fiddle players can get into this because, you know, they're, I mean, the whole idea of fiddling is playing for dances, but as melodists, you know, melody players, you know, we don't often think about, like, stuff that repeats endlessly and sort of, after a while, just sort of disappears, you know, into the background because it's repeating. But if the kind of thing that, oh, man, if it went away, you'd notice it, but you don't necessarily notice it while it's happening, you know? And that's kind of what this stuff is in the category of. I mean, it's really, it's kind of boring to just, in some ways, to, you know, play this, you know, without variation, but if it's in the context of something else, you know, it can be great, you know. And that's what we kind of have to remember, you know, as musicians, is that, like, something that might be just, you know, okay, this might be not that interesting intrinsically, but it might be incredibly, you know, worthwhile and useful in the context of like the over, you know, larger musical context. Argument for simplicity. Okay, so let's play something complicated. Let's do like something a little more jazzy now. So, what would you like to play? Like Lady Be Good or something?
Sure.
Something really simple. Yeah. Okay. Simple to come and. Oh, G is good, I guess. Yeah. G is good?
You should.
Okay. I'll make it a little easier to back you up. Alright. So, 1, 2, 3. Thank you. Anybody got any questions about the what for, why, or wherefore art we thou is not, is isn't, could have been, could have, would have, should have?
Okay. I have a question.
Good.
as a new violinist or fiddle player, is it important for your fingering and everything you're doing technically set? Is there a specific way to do that, or is it just kind of what works for you is okay?
Well,
I know for violin it's very.
It's pretty set. I think that, you know, even in the context of you know, classical violin, you know, what works for you is okay, but it's in with sort of in within a set of parameters, and that might be tighter or looser depending on what you're hoping to do. You know, if you plan to be spending a lot of time up here, you know, or even here, you know, like, you know, that stuff, then you probably want to make sure that your wrist is like, you know, kind of open like that instead of like, you know, holding the instrument up, because if you're doing this, then you're not going to be able to get any farther than like, well, it just doesn't work, you know. It's, you can't, unless you're Byron Berlin and you have your hand, you know, you can just like stretch up with your little finger or something. But so that kind of thing, you know, sort of basic principles. And if, you know, as far as the bow hold, well, you want to keep that thumb bent, because if you don't, then, you know, it's kind of, when you want to play fast, you know, you have to go back like this, and then, you know, that's really hard on your elbow. When, you know, really, if you keep it bent and you like you let your elbow float up, then all of a sudden, you know, instead of like that, you know, like that, you know, it's like much easier, you know, things like that. So, all those, I mean, all that classical stuff is really aimed at like making it, you know, even though it's like feels weird at first, like, you know, you're like twisted and nuts. Stuff is really, really useful, you know, for just being able to just get around on the thing. Know, later on when you actually can play. So, yeah, it's all sort of, it's very functional. I mean, it's really, you know, if you look at the classical violin teaching thing, it's like probably one of the most refined, you know, well thought out, you know, over centuries systems for teaching anything that you can actually find. The problem is that when they like start loading the style stuff on, you know, like, oh, you must vibrate through every day. You know, all that stuff, you know, and then play as loud as you can all the time because you're trying to reach the back room, even though, like, you know, usually we're playing into microphones and it doesn't really matter. It's like the difference between, like, a Shakespearean actor declaiming on a stage and somebody like Kenneth Branagh, you know, in a movie, you know, like, making it so much more interesting, you know, because, you know, you whisper, do all the stuff that you normally wouldn't in a Shakespearean play. It's kind of... Well, I think, you know, anybody would do, you know, if you're going to start, you know, go to a Suzuki teacher or somebody and just get, you know, before you start getting into the bad habits, you know, because you're going to have to undo them and just, you know, make, you know, let them make you, you know, make the box and, you know, make sure your wrist's over and, you know, get your elbow over and make sure your wrist back and just, you know, just those. There's not that many things, really. I mean, it seems like a lot of stuff when you're first doing it, because, oh, God, you know, and that's going, oh, you know, it all gets, it's like trying to juggle plates or something at first. But once you just get used to that position, you know, it just makes so many things much easier. And
did you both start that way?
Oh, did we both start that way? Yeah, we did, right? Yeah. You like Noi Suzuki, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
How long
yeah.
before you branched off from that?
Was sort of a classical violin failure at about 13. I took an electric guitar for a couple of years in high school until I heard somebody play fiddle. I never even knew that fiddling, you know, existed in its, you know, true form until, you know, I played Devil's Game for a couple of years. But yeah, I heard it when I was about 15, and then I said, "Oh, this is my music. This is what I was meant to do." So I switched back to fiddle. And started studying that. And you probably, I don't know, when did you start here?
Shortly after I started Suzuki, I started playing fiddle.
Cool. That's great. So who did you hear? What, did you hear a fiddle player? Did you go to like a fiddle contest or something?
Yeah, there's like a Texas fiddler kind of style fiddler.
Oh,
there.
Cool.
It's a basic tune.
Nice. Yeah. And you were already, that's the great thing about Suzuki, they start you by ear. They didn't have Suzuki when, they didn't have I didn't have water when I was growing up. We had to smash together our own hydrogen and oxygen molecules. We liked it. But yeah, it would have been nice. But you know, I was always trying to learn stuff by ear. I'm old enough to remember like the Beatles when they were, you know, they had hair and stuff. They were young. That's what got me into music, actually, the Beatles. So I was already ruined for classical music. Yeah. Hardly ever, you know. It's just not a, you know. It's funny. I played. It's just not my area of like interest. I haven't concentrated there. I love to dance to that stuff. It's really great. You know, I just love the whole vibe. You know, just like oi, oi, oi. You know, oi. It is a great musical tradition. And it really does incorporate the fiddle. And there's some unbelievable fiddle players that are doing that, actually. Mostly women, interestingly enough. Yeah. It's not something that's I've actually, you know, I'm more interested in just my interest, you know, my personal taste. It's led me to like blues and bluegrass and Swedish stuff and some Brazilian and jazz and all that kind of stuff.
What do you see as the difference? Celtic and American fiddle music.
Oh, Celtic.
Style or in
technique? Well, you know, that's a really good question, and it could take a while, but, you know, the idea that Celtic music is, you know, well, Scottish and Irish are a couple of different branches of that, I think, you know, in like American fiddle music, you just have a lot of blues. There's a lot of blues influence, and there's also a lot of, like, influence of horns, so you get like, you know, with, you're more likely to have like in American fiddle music, you're more likely to have a longbow, and if you're going to have like an ornament, you know, it's probably going to be, you know, something like that. Now, whereas in Celtic music, you get those little. Celtic music very well. I'm working on it. This is my next project, actually, my next big project. But the bow is more active, and it's also, well, it kind of depends. But in Irish music, it's pretty gentle. You know, you're up here a lot. You know, there's a lot of wrists and fingers going on. You know, that kind of stuff. In Scottish music, you have a little bit more driving kind of bow. You know, it's a little bit more dry. It's a little bit closer to like Texas style, actually. You think about Texas style being like, that kind of da 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 da, you know, like drivey. But you just take out all that, that kind of like squiddly doos. So that's, I think, you know, I mean, kind of overall, you know, you just have this really strong blues and sort of American pop music of the 30s and 20s influence and fiddling, you know, that just, you know, is there. It's pretty hard to mistake, you know. Whereas, you know, it's almost like fiddling in the context of a band where, as with the Celtic music, it's a lot of times it's just a fiddle player. And it just seems to stand alone, you know, in a way. I mean, you don't really have, you could just have the fiddle player and you wouldn't miss anything else. And of course, there's streams of American old-time fiddling, you know, like the Appalachian style, where you don't miss anything else. It's just like, it sounds like a whole band going, which is really hard to do. I only see one person in this room that can really do it well. But, you know, I think, with the Celtic, you know, you're talking about the ornaments and the idea that there's really, I mean, you have slides and things, but it's not the blues slides. Hope that helps. Okay, well, one more tune, and then I know that Danny's supposed to do the bit. Oh, is he outside? Oh, I'll give up the floor then. Or maybe let's call him in. Let's get him in here. We'll do a what? Why don't we call him in and we'll play one with him and then we'll kind of like sort of ease in.
Make the transition very seamless. And I'm going to bring all my CDs and DVDs and stuff over to the merch table right after this. But if you want to see me as I'm kind of going out or something, and you know, eliminate the merch table for a second. Actually, the merch table is a good thing because they're actually I'm donating 10% to KBU. But if you want to, you know, which is, I love that radio station. It's great, you know, it's like total. It's like anarchy that works. You know, and anarchy can work. It's a little more organized.
So let's get Danny. No, it's not all.
There he is.
Danny, hi. Do you want to like do a like a smooth transition here between the fiddles and the guitars? And, we'll just play a tune together, and I'll get out of your way. And Danny and I are going to be doing a set at 1 p.m. Today on the main stage. I think it's the main stage, right? And
look, it's a banjo.
Oh, a banjo! Watch out!
And you want to play a banjo duet?
Banjo duet.
Banjo guitar, banjo fiddle playing.
Banjo
fiddle. How you doing? You may sound great.
And I'd like to again thank Alex Hargreaves for being so great. Right, so we'll let's do a banjo and fiddle duet. That's the quintessentially uniquely American thing. You know, that's just it's so completely magical and weird. No, that it just has to happen. No, it should happen more. No.
What does your G do there? This just got off the plane, so it's going to be settling in. Let's gear up an A, I reckon, right?
Oh, okay, sure. No, I was thinking like we could do Leather Bridges or something like that.
Okay, Leather Bridges. Okay, cool. Let's play that.
We were talking about those tunes that have like those channels that go, you know, that are so. Well, we'll do a tune that doesn't have that. We'll have do a tune that's sort of like it hardly has any melody at all, but it does have, you know, it's just you can do a lot with it. It's called Leather Bridges, which doesn't really. Supposedly, I don't know, you hear different stories on this, and I think, you know, they probably all have some kind of truth to them, but they're not, they don't have anything to do with pants, exactly. I've heard that the tune actually refers to tobacco leaves, which at one point in the drying process are referred to as leather bridges. You could dry tobacco in here, actually. Or other kinds of herbs. Probably, which I'm sure has never happened here, and probably never will. So this is just a C, just called Leather Bridges, and it just goes a little bit like this. Thank you.
has some further questions for me, I'll take me outside. And
the working moment.
Is this like a banjo and guitar trick?
Well, I wanted to talk about the banjo, but since I'm audience driven, it depends on what people say. Hey, Dale, so when I get done, we got time for a little practice.
Yeah, okay.
Where would you like to meet at to do that?
Okay.
I'll be back.
Well, they're doing what you've seen here all day, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they've got